everybody. Welcome to T.O.'s Roadhouse. In the man cave. Yeah, out behind the house. In the house with us, Mr. Colt Ford.
Hey,
good
buddy.
To see you, brother.
Good
How
to
are
see
you, my
friend? Good to be seen.
It's good to have you on the podcast, man. We've been trying to get you on this thing for a while.
That's my pleasure, man. It's my pleasure.
I was just listening to our record that you allowed me to be on, me and Tracy Byrd, man. If I was running this country.
I want to shoot a video for that.
I think we should
just go to like a real, because the song, people are going to think instantly when they see it, they're going to think it's something political. It's like, this ain't nothing political.
It's a redneck song.
It's a redneck honky tonk song.
When did that album come out? I think I did that last year, didn't I?
Yeah, we did it last year. I had so much music. You know, first it was like, oh, you need to finish. And then all of a sudden they're like, you got too much music. And I'm like, so I put out kind of a EP, and then we followed it up, added those back on to the song, like 24 songs. It just came out about 3 weeks ago called Must Be the Country. And that song, I mean, I'm like, for so many years, you know, they've told me, you know, oh, we don't know if you're country. I'm like, well, I don't know where you're from, but where I'm from, I am. I mean, but I'm like, that song, that's as country as anything I've heard come out of Nashville.
I loved it, and the track was awesome, man. I don't know the pickers that you had on them, but you could tell they were A-level players.
Yeah, I think Moose is probably playing keys, yeah. And I think Swine was on bass. That's my guitar player is playing guitar.
He's a chicken-picking fool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That guy can play.
Yeah, man, that's one of his favorite, because he got to really do some chicken-picking, but that song's fun. I think it'd be fun to, like, do a video of that, like in an old honky tonk, or maybe go sit up and do it like we just set up a card table in the middle of the Country Music Hall of Fame and do it in there and show some of the people we're talking about.
Absolutely. What was the name of the album?
Must Be the Country.
Must Be the Country.
Yeah.
There it is, right there on the screen.
Yeah.
And you had a ton of other artists that were on that project. Who else did you have on
Good
it?
Lord.
I know Jamie Johnson was one of them.
Matt Stills on there. No, Jamie was on my. You know, oddly enough, the very first person I ever wrote a song with in Nashville was Jamie Johnson.
No kidding.
And people, you know, Jeremy Popoff from the rock band Lit. Mm-hmm. I had a connection there, and I came up here, and he goes, "Do you know who Jamie Johnson is?" I was like, "Yeah, I love that Dollar record." I mean, he goes, "Well, he's coming over here about him." And I told him about you, and this is before Ride Through the Country's ever even come out. And he's like, "Jamie's a little different." He's like, "Now, I don't know if y'all are going to fight. We're going to write a song. Or he's going to tell us to kiss his ass and leave." I said, "Well, I've been through all three of those things before." And so he came, and we wrote a song called Tailgates on my first record, and then Jamie sang on my record called Cold Beer. I went to the studio the next day, the big studio. Him and Noah Gordon had that studio over there off the row. I'd never been in the studio, and I didn't know how it worked. I'm going in the studio. All we got is an acoustic and the vocal.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about that. I'd written a lot of songs and a lot of hip-hop songs.
What year was this?
This has been 2007.
No kidding.
And so I didn't know. And we go in there, and Jamie's like, "All right, we're going to play it." You know, he's like, "Do the verse." And I'm like, I'm watching these guys write stuff down. I'm like, what the hell are they writing down?
Ones and threes.
4-4, diamond, 6. I'm like, I don't know what any of that means. I'm looking at Shannon. He's going, I mean, so we're sitting there, and then all of a sudden, they go in there, and the second take, it was like, a blind man being able to see. And I didn't know about players either. So I'm sitting there in this session. Well, Jamie put it together. I mean, hey, Jacobs is on fiddle. Moose is there. Swine's there. I mean, like, I don't know any of these guys that have played on 100 million records, yeah. You know. And it was just eye-opening and great. But I got off track there. But
no,
there's so many different people. I mean, Dylan Carmichael's on this record, the first single, which I love Dylan. You know, He's Eddie and John Michael's nephew.
I've got a chance to spend some time with him over the years, man.
I think Dylan's great, and he's just good, true country. And I'm liking seeing a lot of that coming back, even though I'm always a little different. I mean, but even my stuff now, like, hell, I sound like Merle Haggard compared to some of the stuff coming out of here today.
But I think traditional country, there's a lot of that stuff that's coming back, and you can kind of see it kind of working its way back in. But I think a lot of it is the mood of the people out there in the country. And if radio's not going to play it, people are going to find it in other places.
They can find it now. We have a kid on our label. I don't know if you've ever heard of this kid named Brian Martin.
Mm-mm.
He was an oil rig kid, you know, Louisiana, Texas. It's very similar to you or Jamie or, you know, Cody James. He's streaming 7.5 million a week right now. He's never been on the radio.
Wow.
Never been on the radio.
Wow.
I meant, like, just incredible songwriter. Like, one of these kids where I'm like, you got to stop, dude. You've written 6 songs today. That's enough. Like, it just pours out of him. And it's very old school, traditional, and I'm like, 7.5 million a week. I mean, like,
that's crazy.
Never been on the radio ever.
Wow. Why would you even care to?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, who cares? I mean, like, it's great.
You know, and from folks outside looking in, this music business can be so confusing, just like for a young guy coming in town, walking to the studio for the first time. It's like walking into a foreign country, man. I mean, really and truly it is, if you've never been in that environment. Just the way the players are structured, the way a good high-end producer runs a session, just the caliber of the engineers and the quality of the studios and the places, and knowing that you're in a town where if there's anything that you need, you know, a cartage is a phone call away. Yeah. I mean, any kind of gear,
players, sound, whatever,
instruments, anything you need is a phone call in 10, 15 minutes. Way. Yeah. It's that real.
Nashville is really cool like that. And I'm dealing with some new young artists on our label right now who've, you know, like all of us, we're still artists too, but we've been doing it a lot longer. And there's times I got an artist now dealing with it's like, I'm not sure if I like how things are going. I was like, it's been a month. I mean, the record's been out a month. Like, hang on. It's, you know, like, but that younger generation's so used to
instant gratification.
I mean, like, they do it, and I'm like, I don't know that that makes you a star, because
something
popping on TikTok. I don't know that that means you're going to go out there. I mean, and are you good? Can I go put you on an hour in front of Tracy? Do you know how to do an hour show? I don't know.
And then you wonder, it's like, okay, so I do get one thing to go viral. It's not like stringing a bunch of top tens or top five songs together.
Right.
You don't. There's a thing called momentum. And I think there's a misconception about getting something to go viral, then all of a sudden you tell them, how do you back it up?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That doesn't mean that that's...
doesn't mean you have
a
career.
Can you do anything other than that? Yeah, I mean, like, can you sustain this? And can you give me something else? Because I'm going to need more than one. Because
once you sing one cat gag on a video, I mean,
right.
What else?
Yeah. I watch every single one of them. I cannot get enough cat videos, I'll be honest with you. The guys that do the cat voiceover stuff... I'm being completely honest.
I love all that.
On the back of my bus and watch that shit for 2 hours. But, and my friends are like, "Stop sending me cat videos."
But you can't put those on in front of George Strait.
Right? No, exactly. You can't. I mean, it's fun riding down the road. Oh,
I sit there and get entranced, and 2 hours to go by. It's like, holy crap! Like, I gotta get up and do something. I need to do something productive.
Exactly. I mean, the business has changed a lot. It's not like you and I.
Do you feel like you've got a better grasp of it now? I mean, it's been
Sometimes I think I do, and then sometimes years. I go, I don't know. I don't know if I do or not. I mean, like, because something will happen, I'm like, how does that work? I don't know. I mean, you know, and they're constantly on me about TikTok. I'm like, I'll be 54 here in a couple weeks, boys. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm doing the best I can. I don't know a ton about it. You know, I'm trying, and there's no rhyme or reason why something works.
Well, and your butt don't look that good.
I know, it really does not. I don't even have one at all. Saying, yeah, man, I mean, you ain't telling
me. I mean,
the first
dozen times I got on there, I said, there's nothing but girls on there shaking their butts. That's pretty
Which
much.
Which is fine.
It is fine. There's nothing fine. Wrong
there's
with
that. There's a market
that.
For that.
And there's a big market
I'm
for that.
I'm probably a customer. But I mean, like, I just want to make music. And like I said, they're signing these people to these deals based off something that I don't even know if it's real or not. You know what I mean? I don't even know if the number is real. Like, and they put an artist out, and then they have one. They're not doing the artists, these young artists. I really feel like somewhere management and booking and stuff, they need to do better, because you're not telling these artists the truth. You're lying to them, and then all of a sudden they have one hit song, and you don't even know if it's really a hit song. It's just they're telling you it's a hit song, and that these charts telling you that, but are ticket sales telling you that? Like, there's more variables to it than just saying, you ran a song up here as number one, because I've looked at sometimes I'm going, well, it says it's the number one song, but I got a song that ain't even in the top 50 that has downloaded more times than that. So is it?
I still get confused by all the analytics. It's like we released a bunch of stuff over the last couple of years. I dropped that anniversary collection out. And so you get something that responds well, and you put it in the show, but it don't react well. And then I play something else off the album that didn't respond well on streams and downloads.
So
I put it in the show, but it works well. You know, it's not like working a single up the chart, so you get to feel that momentum escalate.
Right.
So it's confusing for me to how to process that in my mind
for me.
And then I watch my kids. You got kids, you understand. Right. You know, my kids could care less about listening
to song is.
Or listening to the radio. They have access to everything in the palm of their hand.
Yeah.
And they're listening to weird, eclectic, left to center, whatever it is in their mind that they like. They find their own little niche. I don't know how to relate to that. I mean,
it's
just a different
too.
World.
I mean, my son, I mean, like, I'll get in his truck sometimes. I was like, you can't possibly play those 8 songs that you just played in a row together. That's impossible. Like, you can't. I mean, like, they just like what they like. He doesn't care. He doesn't know what the number one song is. No. It doesn't mean anything to him. Like, I mean,
and it probably
he loves old school. I mean, he might go Tracy Lawrence, Brooks and Dunn, and then all of a sudden
Tone Loke.
Yeah, I mean, and all of a sudden go to Lil Wayne, Coe Wetzel. I'm like, what are you, dude? You're freaking me out. I'm at the Fleetwood Mac, Tom Petty. Like, he just likes what he likes. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah, I like to get into a mood.
Right.
You know, it's like driving songs. If I'm going on a road trip, I want stuff that's got a certain vibe. And my wife will tell me, I love heavy metal stuff too. Right. I mean, I'll get in some pretty aggressive, I like to work out certain things, but I don't need to drive to it.
No.
Because it makes my foot heavy.
Yeah.
And makes me drive aggressive. So a certain.
Nobody had ever known that TL likes heavy metal music.
Oh, dude, man. That's I like awesome. All kinds of stuff, man. I
that's
listen
me.
To
like, whatever. People always like, what's in our pile? I was like, I couldn't.
Everything from Lady Gaga.
I'd freak you out if I told you what I was listening to. But I love all the different stuff.
And sometimes it might not be for the reason that people think. Maybe I'm listening because I like certain sounds that a producer used on a record, or I'm listening to try to figure out how I can incorporate dubstep into a country record.
Right.
There's a many different reasons why I listen to different styles of music, man. I'm always searching for something.
I love finding new stuff. And
me
that's,
too.
That's what's sad to me about radio is radio used to be about going, look, the radio DJ would go, look what I found.
And they're not allowed to do that.
And they can't do it anymore. I mean, like, what really kills me is, I mean, I get when I first came out, you know, I met you early on in my career. You've always been super kind to me, and I appreciate that. But, like, early on, people were like, oh, we like this Colt Ford stuff. We don't know what to do with it. We're not sure. And I get that early on. But now I've sold 5 million records, and I've still never had a song in the top 40. I've never had a song on the chart. Never.
Wow.
I mean, I've had quite a few number ones that I've written for other people. But even my artist friends go, wait, what about Driving Around song? I'm like, yeah, it's platinum. No, 54. I mean, like, what about, they'll name it. I'm like, yeah, platinum single also. Nope, never. I mean, like, and I think somebody said the other day, they said, you know what it is now, Colt? Early on, they thought this was kind of a little fad. It was cute. Colt Ford doing his thing or whatever. They never expected me to be here 15 plus years later, 9 albums, 5 million records. I mean, they never expect. So now if they play me, they have to admit they were wrong. And I that could be a problem, but it's like, I still, in my heart, people are like, you still chase it? I'm like, I've listening to radio.
Yeah.
I mean, like, my dad's 87. He'll be 88. I don't know how much longer he's got. He's never heard me on the radio.
Dude, think about this. Jimmy Buffett never had a number one record to the thing with Alan Jackson. Look how big he made that into.
There's a yin and yang to it. And I tell people all the time.
I'll get to what you're saying.
They'll say, and even radio people go, well, you don't need radio. Look what you're doing. I'm like.
But it's still something you want to put in your hat.
But for me, the era that I grew up in and how old I am, like, that means you made it, kind of. Like, if you've had a song on the radio and here, and like.
It's validated.
Yeah, and my dad's 88, and my hometown radio station's never played me.
Wow.
And it's like, I don't know. I'm a nice guy. I'm real nice. I mean, I did everything that you asked me to do, and I played every free show you asked me to play. And, you know, it's still just a. It's just something that I wanted. I know it doesn't dictate whether I'm successful or not, because I play music for a living. I still get to do it. It's incredible to get to do that, and I don't take that lightly. But it's like, man, I just feel like I never did. You know, I've never been on an award show. Never got to perform at an award show. Never.
Yeah.
A lot of those things. It's like, even as much as I'm inside, there's still a part of me that feels like I'm an outsider. Because, like, I could go to the award show and be standing there with all the buddies and, you know, Jason and Luke and all them, and they'll go, all right, commercial's over. Colt, go somewhere else. They're going to the front. And you go, all right, I'll go over here and eat popcorn with these people. I mean, you can't help but want it.
Absolutely.
I'd be lying if I said I didn't. Like, if it didn't bother me, I'd be lying.
I completely understand. There's a lot of validity to that, too. You know, it's easier to say that it doesn't mean anything when you've had it.
Yeah.
To never have had it and say, oh, it don't mean it, because that's bullshit.
Right. No, I mean, I tell people all the time, and the radio would go, well, you don't need it. You're still, and I'm like, you're right. I'm still doing great. But there's still promoters that go, well, no, I can't take Colt because he's not on the radio. Or even bigger artist friends would go, well, they won't let you go because you're not on the radio. I'm like, are we talking about going to a radio station? Do you want to sell tickets? Because I can do that. I sell tickets.
Yeah.
I put on a show. Like, why would you not want somebody that's going to get the crowd fired up and people, you know? So I don't know. I don't know. I just keep playing. I just keep fighting and trying to make the best music I can make.
But things have changed a lot. I mean, since 07, since you first got to town, the whole landscape with the social media platform has allowed opportunities for people that might not have been able to have the same success.
It's so there's good amazing. To it. Now, I realize that because a kid, there's somewhere a kid can make it without having to do all the other stuff.
But it still doesn't. It's just like, well, you want American Idol? So what? Don't mean you're going to have a career.
No, man.
So you've got 7 million TikTok followers. You're going to get a record deal, and they're not going to look at you unless you have so many followers. Doesn't mean you're going to have a radio career. It does not mean it.
And that's what I don't think a lot of the younger artists can channel. But I'm doing so. But they can't quite understand how to connect those dots. And honestly, I don't know sometimes how to connect those dots. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I mean, and sometimes your buddies can come along and help you. I mean, like. Find out who your friends are. Yeah. That was huge. That was huge for Tim and Kenny to be a part. And that
absolutely.
And I thought it was
they wouldn't be where they are without me.
Exactly. I thought, boy, if you guys wouldn't have had TL on that song. No, but honestly, it makes me so happy that your buddies that you've come up with go. Yes, we want to be a part of that.
We ain't gonna tell the label. Just what time you want me there?
Right,
and I miss those days.
And to have the balls, excuse me, to be able to do it, because there's a lot of them out there that I've done a lot of songs with. I'm like, but they won't do the video with me, and I'm like, will you go in there and fight for them? I mean, like, they're not gonna tell Luke Bryan no. What are they gonna tell Luke Bryan no?
I know for a fact that it's a lot more satisfying being on the backside of a radio career after you've had success, because I'm enjoying this phase of my career a whole lot more, because I'm not having to do the song and dance no more.
Right, you don't have to.
But I've also already had that success too.
Right,
and that makes a difference.
And I guess again, like I said, I ain't bitter. I don't know how to lose. I just want to win. And all I've ever wanted, like, give me the same opportunity. If you play this record a couple hundred times and you go, Colt, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, at least give me a shot. That.
But when you go, I just don't know. I mean, like, I don't know what's going to happen when I leave your man cave here, but I got shit to do, and you're probably going to ask me to leave, so I got to go. I mean, like, you got to go. I can't be scared that I don't know what's going to happen.
But you've had some success that I haven't, man. You know, I've never had a hit record as a songwriter on somebody else, and you've had a few of those, man. I didn't realize I was going through all your stuff. I didn't realize you wrote Dirt Road Anthem.
Yeah, Dirt Road Anthem. That's my song. That was on my that's my first album. I mean, wow. I mean that. You know, that's we had already done. I think I'd probably done 300,000 or 400,000 of that before Jason ever recorded it.
Wow,
and it'd never been on the radio. I've told Justin Moore a couple of times, like, why don't you redo Chicken and Biscuits or something? Because it's a platinum record that's never been on the radio. Like, there'll be people that think, that's your song, which is fine. Yeah. I mean, they think that's almost a diamond, you know, that's almost 10 million. That's Jason's biggest song, not even close, his biggest song. Hell, he almost didn't do it.
Wow.
He almost didn't do it. He called me when he was in the studio and was like, I don't know if I can do this, Cole, because Michael Knox was really pushing him. And he's like, this song, I think, will change your career.
You're right.
And it was. He said, this song is going to take you from this level artist to A+, A-list star. I didn't know. Me and Brantley Gilbert wrote that song together. We were just writing some old redneck shit that we liked. I didn't think nobody, we didn't know nobody would care none about that. And, you know.
Landscape sure has changed, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing how diverse country music is. And, I mean, you can hear things that are rap-influenced, rock-influenced, R&B, Western swing, gospel. I mean, it's got little hints of everything in it. We're kind of the melting pot. We're America's music, man.
Nashville is where, I mean, yeah, country music's kind of, it can go any direction. And that's what's cool is because a lot of other genres, you can't do that. You can't jump over here into ours as easy as there's so many talented artists in Nashville to go, I can make.
And it also makes me respect the musicians too, because, you know, guys that are locked into a heavy metal discipline, when they try to play country, it's a little left footed.
No, it's completely
different. You've got guys that are like Brent Mason and Tom Bukovac that can play anything.
Doesn't matter what you throw out. A lot of my sessions too, I've always let a lot of guys in my band play, but like people like Swine and Moose and those guys. Dan Dugmore has played on tons of my records. I meant, like, is there anybody any better than him? Bruce has played on tons of my records. Is there any better than those two guys on steel guitar? I I don't know. It'd be hard to say that there is. And I don't sound like traditional, you know, some
Bruce Boughton.
Yeah.
Bruce Boughton played on Sticks and Stones. Did you know that?
That's
played on my very first record.
I mean, and there you go. I mean,
played in my first showcase at the Bluebird Cafe. Man, those guys have been around a long time. And they played on so many.
You realize how good and how much stuff they've seen come and go. And
yeah.
And that's always really humbling to me that those guys would be a part of it.
Like Hayjakus, man. Yeah, what a great player Rob Hayjakus is.
I mean, like just as good as ever laid
just
one on his
sweet,
shoulder.
Just a sweet, sweet guy, man.
Yeah.
Played on all that Gar stuff.
It's been so cool that a lot of those guys have been on my records. And then the artists and people like you that have, people ask me all the time, I'm like, how did you do that? I'm like, it's been relationship based for me.
Every
like
bit of it.
I see a lot of this stuff happen now and I'm like, this is manager talking to man. I know how, cause I've seen it, but I'm like, everybody I've made a record with, I pick up the phone, call them. Like we buddies, we talk about stuff besides music. We're normally talking about golf or hunting.
Managers, a manager can get in the way.
Right. They normally just met. Yeah. Managers and agents and all normally, and lawyers, y'all normally just get in the damn way.
Ooh, talk about that.
I mean, like, that's the thing all the time. I'm like, why don't y'all just let us make the music and then y'all go do the rest? Leave us alone. We know what we're doing.
Yeah. It don't work that way.
But it really don't work that way, does it? I'd like to think it does.
It doesn't. Let's shift gears, man. I know you're a hell of a golfer. How did you get started? How was your golf background? Did your dad play? Did you grow up playing golf?
Yeah, I started playing when I was young, but I played a lot of sports.
So you were 2-time All-American.
Yeah, I was a college All-American. And I played the tour for about 10 years. Most people, when they see me, they instantly go, oh, I bet he was a male model or something like that.
Well, that's what I thought.
I know you did. Yeah. I mean, it happens all the time. It's a burden I got to bear, you know, hell. But, golf is just something I meant. Like I set out to do what I said I was going to do when I was 10 years old. I met people, I was like, oh, I'm going to play golf and make music. And people are like, yeah, that's great. We'll see you. You've done it at the tire discount store, I'm sure, at some point. But it didn't for me. I did what I said I was going to do. I played professional golf for a living, made my living for that. I could never turn music off. It never went away for me.
Yeah.
And so being in my early mid-30s is still, and people are like, why are you still fooling around with music? I'm like, I can't make that shit go away. Like, it's just.
Gets in your soul,
people
brother.
Ask me all the time, like, when did you get into music? I'm like, never. Music got into me. I don't know. I mean, I just could never make it go away. So I was still writing and writing records. And when I quit playing professionally, then I really didn't know what to do. My dad's just a little old used car dealer. And I'm like, well, I can sell cars. I know how to do that. But that's not what I wanted to do. He didn't want me to do that. And then I was like, well, I'll be a golf pro, a teaching pro. And I started working and teaching some tour pros and stuff. But it's like music, it just never went away for me. And so I literally went in and wrote Ride Through the Country, the whole album, and about wrote and finished it in about 2 weeks. And people were like, this is great. Don't know what it is. Like, they didn't know what to do. And hell, I didn't really know what to do with it either, because there was nothing really like what I was doing. Not to mention that the fact that I was 36-year-old, 320-pound guy in a cowboy hat. I meant really good looking, but I meant, but still not the typical. It wasn't like I walked out there looking like Luke Bryan and Dierks Bentley. I meant like I walked out there, and so it was crazy. And we came to town, and people, we knew a lot about the music business because Shannon and I had made a lot of records, and our music business was like, but we didn't know anything about country. We didn't know how it worked and anything, and. One of my good friends, the founder of the Zaxby's Chicken Fingers, Zach, I went to him. I was like, dude, we got this record. He's like, well, what do we got to do? I was like, well, we probably got to start a record label. Because Nashville, we've met with everybody, and they're like, we love it. We have no idea what to do with it. We're terrified. So we started our own record label, Average Joe's Entertainment. And Zach was kind enough to go, well, I love you, and I love the music. And you believe in Shannon. You think he can run it. And he's like, what does it cost? So we told him the number, and he goes, all right, we'll start. So we started Average Joe's Entertainment, and that was over 15 years ago. And now we have a film and TV company. I mean, like, we're honestly, according to all the things I've looked at, the most successful independent record label ever in Nashville. Because we have no major affiliation at all. I mean, there's other independent labels, don't get me wrong, but they have whether it be a distribution deal, they have some kind of way they're.
Who does y'all's distribution?
We.
You're not going through Orchard or anything.
We did all of our deals direct. Shannon did all of them direct. Wow. I mean, he's a genius with that kind of stuff.
And that's easier since most of it's digital.
Yeah, now, like,
are you doing any physical at all?
Yeah, I mean, we still, and my fans are so damn country. Some of my fans are country.
Some of them still got cassette players
right,
in the truck.
That's what's funny. Like that, some radio go, I don't know if you're country. I'm like, where are you from? Because if you go to my show, they country that scare you. Like,
oh yeah, these they're real country folks.
Like, yeah, from down in the holler and down in them. I mean, like
there's
real
guys
country
running,
folks
running catfish lines at midnight.
Yeah, trot lines with a damn milk jug.
Dang right. Floating jugs.
I just, so I don't know. It's been an interesting ride, and I know it's been a little odd and different for me, but I mean, like, I tell people all the time when they're the country and the rap and all that stuff, and it's like, go back. What do you think? Listen to smoke that cigarette. Listen to Hot Rod Lincoln. What do you think they're doing there? They're making songs with words that rhyme together. I mean, you realize Carrie Underwood don't sound like Loretta Lynn to me either. I mean,
no.
So, I mean, like, that's what I don't understand. Like, they'll say this. I'm like, yeah, I hadn't heard anybody, you know. I mean, they're good, but, like, music, it changes. It evolves. To me, it's the content and the person delivering. Like, you can tell whether this is fake or real. Like, and I remember Red Akins, told the Billboard, somebody's like, if you don't understand Colt, go to a show. Go see him play. He said, if you go to a show and you think you're at a rap show, then I think you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, like, I got full band. I got, you know, it's – I just making the music the way I know – the only way I know how to make it.
Well, you're just giving out what's in your soul, man. It's obviously –
I don't know any way other else to do it.
I mean, there is no other way to do it. It's not manufactured. It's not contrived. It's you making music, man.
Yeah.
And there's something respectable about it. And you're also influencing people, too. I mean, there's guys like Upchurch and guys out there that have come along that I know were influenced.
A lot of those guys, Church, and even Jelly has said, you know, like –
I mean, could you have ever imagined 20 years Jelly Roll getting a record deal and being on the radio?
10 years ago.
It's a ten years ago.
10 years ago, they would have.
And I'd love to see it.
And Jay, he's one of the sweetest guys.
Sweetheart.
Ever. Awesome. Like, but 10 years ago, not a chance.
No way.
Not a chance.
Nope.
And so he said it to me before. He goes, I think you were about 10 years ahead of the curve. And maybe that's the case. Somebody's got to run through the door.
Yeah.
Somebody had to go first. So that's when I sit back and look at it from afar and I go, hell yeah, that's pretty cool. I moved the needle a little bit with Dirt Road Anthem and things like that. It moved the needle a little bit. I didn't set out to do that. I was just trying to make the best music I could make. But that is cool, and that is humbling, and it's cool that there's a whole generation of these artists now that have gone. You know, I mean, your Sam Hunts, even Tyler, them when they were FGL. I mean, he's from right up the road where I'm from. Like, I didn't even know I didn't know I could make records like that till I heard Colt Ford. I didn't even know that was allowed. So when I first came to town, there was people going, what is that 808 you got there? I mean, like, they didn't, you know, I mean, we didn't know. We were just making music. It was honest. And to this day, it's still as honest as I know. I mean, like, I don't cut nothing I don't like, or if I write it, I mean, like, I talk about stuff I know about, or I was standing there watching you getting ready to, watching my buddies going, hold my beer and watch this. I mean, we've been there.
Absolutely.
I mean, and it's still awesome to be able to be out playing music at, you know, in kind of a young person's game for me and you. I mean, I hear some of them the other day when I don't want to say who, a young artist is like, man, I'm tired. I was like, boy.
Suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah, I don't want to hear nothing about you. You're tired.
Music business, like, don't care if
you're
tired.
You're single. I got ex-wives. I got babies. I got, like, what are you talking about? You're tired.
Tired.
You're going
to
play.
Go to bed at 10 o'clock for about 3 days.
You're going to play 65 shows this year, and I'm going to play 110. I don't want to hear about you being tired. It's what you wanted. Get up and get after it.
And you know, when you're young, you got to do all the things that are required.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you get our age, I don't have the energy to do all the things that are required anymore, nor the desire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. On lots of things.
On lots of things.
Yeah, there's lots of things. I'm just like, nah, I'm just going to go watch Law & Order.
Yeah.
In my bedroom in the bus.
Honey, is there any ice cream in the freezer?
Yeah, exactly. That's normally what the stop for me is. It's like, is there any Haagen-Dazs anywhere around us right now?
So what were some of the early influences, artist-wise, that you were gravitating to? Kind of get me in your head when you were a young guy.
I think you're a product, obviously, of your environment.
Yep.
My dad's from Hartwell, Georgia. My mom's from Anderson, South Carolina. My dad didn't have indoor plumbing until he was 18. You know, it's country. Like pick cotton country. So, obviously, he liked that. Old country music, so you're around that. But then my mom and dad loved Elvis. And so if you see me play, I'm not saying I'm Elvis, don't get me wrong. But I move around pretty good on stage. I love to dance and do all that stuff. So that's how my show is. Like, if I saw George Strait doing what I do, I go, what in the hell is going on? But it makes sense for me.
Yeah.
So I loved Elvis. So I loved dancing and moving around. And then all of a sudden I heard, you know, late 70s, early 80s, I was 10, 11 years old, and I heard, you know, Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight, and then Run DMC came along, and it's like, whoa, what is that? And I was just a rural country white kid in Georgia. Like, I'd never even seen a white kid rap when I started rapping. Never seen it at all.
Yeah.
And so I was a product of that. But then I grew up there in Athens, and Kenny Rogers lived right outside of Athens. So Kenny, I'd known Kenny since I was like 12 years old.
Yeah.
And I took a lot of that for granted when I was young, like most young people do. You don't realize. I knew who he was, but I met, and I'm such a huge, huge Kenny Rogers fan.
Me
like,
too.
Honestly, one of the best singers that has ever touched a microphone. When you really, if you really, and obviously I know you're a fan, but when you really, and like, do you realize how huge his voice was? I mean, when you, you watch people sing, and I'm like, this dude's having to hold the mic a foot away because his voice is so powerful.
And he just had that,
it was so
that raspiness. But and he had a song on the radio that I remember from childhood, and nobody ever talks about it. She Believes in Me. That's one of my favorite Kenny Rogers records of all time. Man.
It's
because it had that feeling that, and as a child, I always had that fantasy about what it was like to be a working musician and be out and the heartache that comes along with it. And, yeah, you know, the brokenheartedness and just the smoking bars
and come home. And,
yeah. All of that.
You're wired awake.
I was mesmerized by that type of song, anywhere it came from, whether it was Johnny Lee Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places from Urban Cowboy.
Yeah.
But all those things affected me even before I even knew what love was. I'd cry. Yeah, a sad song when I was 8 years old.
Yeah, man, same for me. I meant, you know, getting off subject a little bit, when you're talking about Jamie earlier. So when I had a copy of In Color.
Oh, my gosh.
Before Jamie had ever, before he'd even given it to Trace, and a lot of people don't know that Trace had cut the song. That was going to be Trace's next single, and then Jamie got a record deal and asked for it back, and Trace gave him a guaranteed number one song and gave it back to him. That shows you what kind of guy Trace is.
Wow.
Because it was done. And Trace at the time was still.
Oh, yeah.
That song is a 3-4 week number one for Trace for sure. And it didn't even go number one for Jamie because, you know, Jamie's going to do what Jamie's going to do, which is why he's as great as he is.
Oh, yeah.
But like, I played that song for my son. He was probably about 8 or 9 years old. And I was playing that song. He's riding in the car, looking in the back of the car, and he's crying. I'm like, what is wrong with you? He's like, man, this just reminds me of Papa, my dad, who was so close with him. And I called Jamie. I go, dude, my 8-year-old is in the back of the car crying like an 8-year-old child would cry because this song has touched him so.
It's the power of music.
I'm like, I just was like, wow. I don't know what to say except, wow, I just wanted to tell you that. I mean, you know, it's just, so music is just, growing up around Kenny, again, I wish I would have realized what was going on when you're a kid, because I didn't, obviously I know it's Kenny Rogers, but I was just around him a lot. You know, I played golf at his house. He had a course at his house. But I didn't think about it, and I didn't think that I would end up where I am here musically with some of the other stuff I was doing at the time.
Kenny was a star for 40 years, 45 years.
I mean, that's what people don't realize. Yeah. And they're like, well, I meant, how much money? I'm like, but you got to realize, like, he was making $50 million a year in the 80s. That's like making $250 a year
no
now.
Kidding.
I meant, and lost it and made it again. Yeah,
his
wife, Mary Ann, was on Hee Haw. Mary Ann's from Athens.
Yeah.
So my dad had sold her parents all the cars and everything. I spent tons of time. Again, I didn't know. Didn't know what I was looking at. Didn't know at his house. I'm sitting in a room like this size with him playing piano and singing and 8 people sitting around there. And I'm going, I was paying attention, but I wasn't.
Yeah,
but I didn't. But not like what I know now. Yeah,
it's hard to comprehend as a young kid, though, man.
No, my really first concert was Kenny and Dolly at UGA Coliseum. That was my first concert. My second concert there was the Commodores.
Wow.
Like, that's as good as it gets on two different genres of music.
Yeah.
R&B, Commodores, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Doesn't get any better. Country music, Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton.
That's Commodores when Lionel Richie was still in the band, too.
Absolutely. I saw Michael Jackson at Kenny Rogers' house.
Wow.
Michael Jackson brought his chimpanzee Bubbles there. I mean, like,
wow.
You didn't think about any of that stuff when you're, you know, 17, 18 years old.
Wow. That's crazy.
So Kenny, man. I don't know if you remember, he used to do that challenge. Kenny was a very good athlete, a very good tennis player, and became a pretty good golfer. But he built that golf course at his house. It started with just one hole, and then it would turn into another hole.
I think number two's tee box was outside his bedroom
window. The third hole. Yeah, it's right by the bedroom window. Yeah. So, I mean, he did this thing at JCPenney's. That's why it was on TV. They played tennis, they fish, they played golf, and they played basketball. It was teams. And he had, like, somebody from the NBA. So he had Bird there. He had Michael Jordan there. This is right outside of Athens. Michael Jordan there. Bird gave him a parquet basketball court the same as Boston Garden.
Wow.
His barn was bigger than the UGA basketball coliseum. Had secret passages through it, all kinds of stuff. The horses lived better than I was living back then. He had. He had a pond. He could heat and cool. You want a trout in it next week? I mean, we'd play golf. This one I was playing for a living. I'd come, he'd go, there's a hole here. And I'd go, oh, shit, I'll just hit it right over that.
And he'd move a tree.
I don't mean a tree. I mean a
tree.
50-footer.
Yeah, with a big
He rode around a golf cart with a spray can in there. And I'd come back from playing on the tour 2 weeks later, and it'd be two 50-foot trees. He's like, well, you can't do that now. And I'm like, no, I can't. You're right. I cannot do that. This wasn't a little landscaping job.
Oh,
this
no.
Bringing them tractor trailers in.
Yeah.
But it's unbelievable. And he was super kind and nice to me. And I wish I'd have spent more time. And
I wish I would have gotten to know him better. Yeah. He was always gracious to me like that. And I remember playing in Athens before he sold that house and him inviting us. We went out, spent the day at his house, and the Labs chased us around and ate our golf balls.
I didn't think about early 90s when the Braves were killing it.
Oh, yeah.
We'd play golf at his house, then hop in his helicopter at the farm and land across the street from Brave Stadium and go sit there and watch some Braves. I'm like 20 years old. I'm like, oh, yeah, shit, everybody does this, right? This is what you do.
Yeah.
Play golf, hop in a helicopter, Kenny, go watch the Braves, front row, Ted Turner. Normal shit.
It's good to be the kid.
I didn't know. I didn't know. I went out to Vegas.
He was the gambler, man.
Went out to Vegas with him one time. And all of a sudden it's like, I'm calling my dad. I'm like, I'm never coming home. I'm 21 years old. I'm like, I'm never leaving here. This is the greatest thing ever.
Wow.
You didn't know. I didn't know. So I've been lucky to be around some. And then when I got to town here, man, the artists, people like you, John Michael, some of the artists that have been around that I had so much. Everybody was super nice to me, has been really kind to me, and I built it off relationships. Yeah. To me, that's what life is. Like, I don't care if you sold 100 million records. I mean, if you're a nice guy, then I want to hang out with you. If you're an asshole, I don't.
I agree.
I don't care how many you sold.
The older I get, the less I care.
Right. It's like, I just want to hang out with people that are good people, and I like to see other people win. I like to see people do good.
So what's in Average Joe's, what other things do you have your hands in on? I mean, you've been there and watched that whole thing grow and spread out into
right.
movies and just documentaries and different things. Man, what other projects you got?
We got a couple of new artists. We got a new artist that I brought that I found actually from Ardmore, Oklahoma, where my fiance is from, a kid named Blake Fades. And he was more just kind of a big 6'3 country white kid that worked on a farm with cows. And I heard him around. I was like, well, this kid is good. And then I just reached out to him on Instagram. And then we signed him. And me and my guitar player, Dylan Maloney, we've been producing his record. And it's kind of like if you mix Post Malone, The Baby, and Coe Wetzel together, that's what this kid would sound like. And I played it for Apple Music. And they're like, that doesn't exist. I was like, oh, it exists. I got it. So it's fun being creative and maybe helping some of these younger artists out.
So you literally have no boundaries?
No.
Musically?
No, I don't. Because I've done so much in other genres. You know, I've written so much. I know a lot of, you know, like, it's funny now. I see the other guys kind of getting the credit. They're like, oh, son, hey, look at Morgan did this song a little bit. I was like, who you think did that shit first? I did that first. I did a song with Run DMC. You know, like, Tim McGraw did with Nelly, like, you know, but as far as the whole next level of it, like, I was
breaking the walls.
I did it first. I was the first person to ever have the number one record on the country chart and the rap chart at the same time. I don't know if that'll ever happen again. I don't know. But I didn't do it to win no award, to try to be first. I was just trying to make the best music I could make. So.
And I think formats have been designed just for marketing purposes and for product placement. But really and truly, the public never really cares, because all my friends growing up, man, I might be listening to the rock station 1 minute or the classic country over here. Or God knows whatever else. I mean, I move all up and
with
down
XM the XM now, man. Like, you get in my truck, like, you probably be irritated because I mean, I might go from 70s R&B. I love that yacht rock. I listen to yacht rock all the time. Yeah. When they put it on hiatus for one of the holidays, I lose my freaking mind. Because I love listening to all that old groovy stuff. I mean, like, I don't know. I just like all kinds of stuff. Anything that's honest and authentic. I think the first time I met you, I was trying to think, was at a festival in Wisconsin, I think. Was the first time that I'd ever met you. That would have been
like about Country Thunder or something like that.
08, 09 or something like that. I just remember that was the first time I'd ever met. And I wanted, like I said, I'm a relationship guy. Like, I didn't care if we ever did music together. I just wanted to build relationships. And from the moment I met you, you've been super kind to me. I just want to say I appreciate that.
That's, absolutely, brother.
There's a lot of people in the town that didn't. I mean, or they'd act like, but like, I like good, honest authenticity.
Dude, I grew up in a town of 1,100 people. I graduated in the largest class that came out of school. We had 49 graduating seniors. There was 52 of us in class. Three of them didn't make it.
Right. Well, there's always a few that can't make it.
You know,
Junior and them just couldn't quite cut it.
Yeah, and some of them had failed two or three times. You know, grew up in a dry county that was the wettest dry county in the state of Arkansas. We all started drinking at a young age. There wasn't nothing else to do. You know, we ride around on the gravel roads and find some place to build a fire.
Dirt Road Anthem was just what we did.
That's it. There wasn't nothing else to do.
Me and Brantley wrote Dirt Road Anthem in no lie in 25 minutes.
Wow.
Had no idea what we were doing. I was picking him up to go write with our dear friend Mike Deakle. I don't know if you ever ran across Mike. Mike wrote, he wrote tons of stuff for Kenny. Mike never moved here, but he had multiple number one. He's probably had 8 or 10 number one songs. But he was a State Farm insurance agent, and him and Kenny were close. He wrote, good Lord, he wrote one of Kenny's huge records. I'm just drawing a blank. All of a sudden, it happens when you get old. But like Kenny goes, I'd stay here and write and keep doing what you're doing with your State Farm. And Mike passed away a year or so ago, a little over a year ago, and he kind of mentored Brantley and I. Like, and Brantley and I were very different from what I meant. He wrote, you know, I mean, we were very different than what Mike wrote, you know.
Yeah.
I meant writing old Kenny Rogers stuff, and I meant like just all kinds of stuff like that. But he was still, I'd known him since I was a kid. He met Brantley, but he still mentored us. I meant Country Must Be Countrywide. He was a writer on that with me and Brantley. He has 3 or 4 number ones with Brantley, and we got a couple together. And so just being around those guys that had that, it's just.
But music to me, if you look back over decades, you know, like Aerosmith and Run DMC, music breaks barriers down.
Sure.
And people that find a common ground in music, racism and prejudice and jealousy, none of that matters.
I'm like, if you take two artists that know who they are, they're comfortable with who they are as artists, comfortable in their own skin. I don't give a shit who it is, you and Kanye West, I promise you, you get in a room, you'll make a cool song.
Absolutely.
Music, I mean,
DMC, transcends all of it.
DMC from Run DMC, Daryl has become a great friend of mine. He'd say, man, music transcends politics and religions. Absolutely. And I'm like, yes, I agree with that.
Maybe musicians should run the world.
Maybe. I mean, what are we talking about running this country? What we'd do? I mean, like, it's maybe it would be, because I ain't never cared nothing about what color. I don't care anything about.
I never did.
This music is good and bad. People are the same way to me. Like, there's good and bad.
And if I don't like you, I don't like you for a reason. It's not because of the color you're
skin.
You've done something
that has offended me. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm just like, I don't understand people like that. Like, and that's what makes music so great, that it just transcends all that, and people out there having fun. And that's our goal, is put on a show and these people forget about that BS for
absolutely
whatever.
And I try real hard, and I have we talked before we started the podcast today. We all have our personal opinions. I try real hard not to bring that stuff into my show. A lot of people take a different philosophy to it, but I think when people pay their money to come out and see a show, they need that escape from all the crap going on in the world.
I agree.
And I speak my opinions through my lyrics, and I don't think I need to stand up there and tell somebody how to live their life or preach at them.
It's if you listen to your music, you should know pretty much where Tracy Lawrence stands.
Absolutely.
If you listen to Colt Ford, I would think it'd be hard for you to misunderstand who I am, because there is some people that make up stuff and music, and it ain't really who they are. But for me, I had to be honest. I didn't have no other way to do it. So everything I'm talking about, I did it. I was standing there. I've been a part of it. Like, it's just honest for me. So that's the way I write songs. And I don't mind. I can write, I call them fantasy-like songs. I can write that too. It's just not what I gravitate to. I gravitate towards real, authentic stuff. However you deliver it to me is, you know, I mean, like Jamie and I play shows. People go, how does that work? I'm like, it works fine. We're talking about the same thing. I just deliver it differently than he does.
You know, and you can take any lyric, and a producer with vision can take a song any way that it's written and turn it into any other format that they choose to in the country. It's just a lyric, man. You can do anything you want in the production.
You think about Darius. I mean, if Hootie and the Blowfish came out today, they'd be a country band.
Absolutely. The Eagles would be a country band.
Eagles, all you do is you'd throw in some steel and fiddle and change some instrumentation, and it'd be a country. That's what it would be.
There would be no other
place for them.
No.
Yeah, I mean, like, so I think that's what's great about music, that it just transcends all the BS. And like you said, the only thing I talk about on stage is the men and women that fight for our freedom. Amen. For you to stand on whatever side of that fence you want to, or as like a lot of them do here, they try to straddle that middle of it. But I just play music, man. I'm not here to preach to nobody, tell nobody. I mean,
I ain't got no right to tell nobody how to live.
Yeah, so I'm afraid they'd come throwing
them. My house got too many windows in it.
Yeah. We don't need nobody throwing them at us.
I've had enough shit.
I just don't do stuff like that. And I see some of the artists, again, that do, and some of them have made a career.
And that's what they do. That's fine. That's how they choose to do it.
Yeah, man, like, I still listen. I still go, oh, that's cool, but it's just not what I do. I mean, but, you know.
What's some of your favorite parts of the country to play, man? Where are your hot spots at?
They vary for me, and it was always interesting, especially as a young artist coming out, and I'm sure same for you. Like, when you come out, you're going, wow, is anybody other than people in Arkansas or Missouri, is anybody other than that going to like what I do? Yeah. And so that was the thing. Started, you know, it was real important for me because Texas, I knew, was such a thing. Texas has always embraced me.
Yeah.
Which has been really cool because I wasn't made in Nashville, and I think they appreciated that. They like the authentic. But, again, I was just out west, Idaho, and those places. I meant, like, there's country. That's why I wrote, when I came up with Country Must Be Countrywide, I was about done with it. And we weren't even supposed to write that night, but me and Brantley and Mike had went to dinner in town. He's like, well, I got this idea, and I'd start it. And we went and finished Country Must Be Countrywide and became Brantley's first number one. And that was it, though, because I'd been to some places that he hadn't been. And he'd go, well, how was it? I was like, you ain't going to believe it. Shit, they just country as we are in Minnesota. They just sound different. They just say, they talk different than we do.
You get outside of those major cities anywhere, even in Pennsylvania. You get outside
world
of
world class. World class.
You get outside of Philadelphia, there's some rednecks up there, boy.
Hillbillies.
And some big old deer, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, it's like going to Green Bay, man.
Yeah.
You ever go to a Green Bay Packers football game?
Oh, yeah.
In the winter, I've been to several of them up there. Ain't nothing but camo and orange.
That's all it is.
That's all that's up there, man. And they live it too,
country
son.
Folks. That's where I was like, they just countrywide. They everywhere. That was kind of where I came up with it. I was like, they like what we like. I did a tour there at church in like 2010, just right when he was really just, Chief was coming out. He was really getting to, and he took me with him to Canada, and we did like 26 shows in February. Would you get the chance to do that again? Pass on that.
don't worry.
It
I
is
will.
Cold. Cold.
I couldn't do 26 shows in a month if somebody held a gun to my head.
A different kind of cold from an old boy like me is used to. But, like, I got back. I'm like, these people are just country.
Oh, right? Without a doubt.
Like, rebel flags flying in their truck. I'm like, everything tripped me out. I was wow, this is crazy. They just talk different.
Had any chance to do overseas stuff?
Yeah, I've done some stuff overseas, and that's been fun to go over. Toby's, you know, the king of all that. And Toby, you know, has been somebody who's been super close to me, and he's doing a lot better right now.
I'm glad, man. I've been worried about him.
He said, tell you hello. I spoke to him yesterday. Yeah, it's nice because the world still needs a little more Toby Keith.
Yeah,
it's like some more Tracy Lynn.
You know I'm a number one fan.
Oh, Lindsay speaks up.
I do.
Oh, she's jumping on in there. I think you tried to do that a while ago, and I ignored you.
I did. You did.
You sounded like my wife.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
It wasn't the male model in the room that was ignoring me. It was you.
Easy.
I don't want to cause no trouble.
There's a song that you have, and my favorite line ever, the favorite lyrics is, you've been to all 50 states, you've eaten on some $1,000 china,
love
some paper plates.
Amen.
And I love some paper plates, and I've eaten at some nice
restaurants. Well, I saw your phone number. You from Alabama.
I'm from Birmingham.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But
he's from Arkansas. I'm from Georgia.
Yeah, uh-huh. We're all good old people.
I hate nothing worse than wearing my Arkansas stuff out around town. Somebody going, Alabama. No, it's not Alabama. So I just got to tell everybody that's been watching our podcast, Scott is usually here, and Scott's father is in hospice and is not in a very good place, so Lindsay is filling in for him today. Scott came out this morning and showed her what button to push. I didn't say buttons, button.
Yeah.
Multiple.
Are there? You're just not supposed to touch them.
Exactly.
I could have never done it, so don't feel bad. If it was up to me, we'd just be sitting here talking. I wouldn't be recording shit.
Who knows if we're actually recording?
Yeah, who knows?
We even got you up on TV, man.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, man, this is high class.
I know. Shoot, we got all kinds of stuff up in here. And most of the time, we do this on the bus, man.
Seen a lot of the things.
Yeah, and the bus has left. When they leave? The middle of July, and won't be back till the end of the month.
West Coast, yeah.
Yeah, we've just been flying in and out. They've been everywhere, so it's just right. It's easier. Just we had to adapt, so here we are. It's been good though.
I understand.
I like it. It's comfortable.
I like it in here too. Junior, what you got? Tell me something good.
Well, here's the thing. I just started golfing recently. I've been twice now, so I'm officially a golfer.
Oh, you got it covered.
I'm gonna get fitted for my green jacket next week, but I'm wondering if you got any funny or crazy good golf stories from out there on the course, because you hang out with some wild characters out there. So what you got?
Some of them, yeah, there are some characters.
There's a few of them.
Playing golf with Daly and Kid Rock and people like that. And there's some stories that probably shouldn't tell.
Yeah, you can't tell all of them.
And, no, it's like that preacher damn right. Tell it all.
Yeah.
I don't believe I told that one.
I tell everybody I got to wait for a few more people to die before I write that book.
Yeah. So, funny story. Mr. Crenshaw is a good friend of mine. And Carl Jackson, who was his caddy at the Masters, you know, for years – you had to use Augusta National's caddies. You couldn't bring your own caddy. Carl was Ben's caddy. He was there when he won his last Masters, and they were giving Carl the keys to the city of Augusta. And this was probably 6-7 years ago. 8 years, I don't remember. And Mr. Ben said, I want you to come play the show. It's downtown Augusta on, like, Tuesday night. You come play. They're going to give him the keys of the city and all that stuff. Yeah. So he'd been at Augusta for – Carl had been there 40, 50 years. I mean, he – and I was sitting there on the stage with him, and they're up there talking. I said, so what are you going to write a book or something, Carl? He's like, write a book? He's like, you know the people that have been out there? He's like, if I even thought I was going to write a book, I don't know if y'all know where I was tomorrow. I might.
You're going to disappear like Hoffa.
I might have to disappear. He goes, nah, I ain't writing no book. That's, people always ask stories. Like, tell me a story. Tell me something about Tracy. Or tell me something. To me, we've all got some stories. It's ours. It's kind of our stories, which is, every now and then you tell something fun, but there's a lot of stuff. It's like, that was us doing it, having fun, doing our thing. And some stories are better left for either a lot of years later or maybe never to be told again, except when you're with that person that was doing it. And that's kind of fun to me.
You know, the thing that I think is so sad about the time that we live in right now, the social media and the instant access, you know, you remember hearing all those stories and when you were a kid growing up, you heard stuff about Rod Stewart, Richard Gere, and
whatever,
but they escalate. And by the time they go through this person, it changes, and this person changes a little bit. It has an opportunity to turn into something cultish in a way that just lingers out there in ether forever. Nowadays, man, something happens, it's right there.
That's
it dangerous. Never gets a chance to evolve into any kind of thing.
Into a legend.
Yeah, it never gets to do that anymore.
So many of the stuff we grew up with, it's like, Boy, you should have been there.
Oh.
Now somebody was there and they got a picture of it and it's already on Instagram.
And it was posted 30 seconds after it happened.
Morgan Wallen cut his hair and it was on Fox News already, you know, so.
He needs to grow that back. Don't throw your mullet away too soon, son.
I love Morgan, but son, who told you to do that?
He's trying to escape something.
The uproar of like Morgan and his mullet, and I've asked Tracy this before, I'm like, when you cut your mullet, like.
Oh, they flipped out.
The world had to have gone crazy.
Well, they did because it was that second woman's fault. She made me do it.
Yeah, somebody else.
Yeah, there was always a woman involved. I guarantee you there's a woman involved here somewhere.
Generally.
That woman is the most hated woman ever for Morgan.
Absolutely. Oh, without a doubt.
Well, all my life, especially playing golf stuff, my hair was short. I mean, I never had long. I didn't even know my hair curled. Because I never had, it's always, it wasn't much different than what yours is. Like, it was always like that. And I just started letting it grow. And I was like, my hair curls? Like, I didn't know that. But at one point, I weighed 340 pounds. And so when I was like, my doctor was like, hey, you better quit screwing around. You're going to fall over dead. So I started getting serious and losing some weight. And I was worried, you're talking about people now. I was worried, like, are they going to like me? Because you know, it's like, you're the fine, fat, cold, like, you know, it really became a concern. Like, will they like me if I lose weight? Like,
I worry about jelly.
I tell Jay too. I'm like, dude, when you're doing it, it doesn't seem like it's, you don't know any different when you've been big. Like when I got that big, I was like, I didn't know I could feel any different till I started losing. It's like, oh shit.
How'd you lose all the weight?
Just
diet.
Being a jackass and stop. I meant like, you know how it is on the road. I meant like.
Well, you get fried food.
Right. It's fast food. It's fried food.
And truck stop food.
And I wasn't a drinker. So I'd like Mountain Dew, which is the worst possible one you can like. And, you know, after a show, it's hard to walk past those pizzas, those six pizzas that are sitting there on the bus.
Because you're hungry. You just
and
worked out.
I didn't eat it till 4:30 or so. And I just did a 90-minute show and getting after it. And it's like, it's hard to just. Welcome back to my bedroom and bypass that, but I kind of started doing that. And I got divorced. My ex-wife she was wonderful, but I found my person and my fiance Megan, and she really helped me too with staying on me about, you know, sticking with the process and all that. So that's been a difference. So yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk about it, but I'm going to bring it up and give you an opportunity. I know that you had some eye issues that have really been giving you fits.
I'm not talking about it.
Was it COVID related? I mean, we'd talked about this in the past. I mean, I'll let you tell it from your mouth.
So I got, during COVID, one day my fiance Megan goes, what's that spot on your eye? And I'm like, spot on my eye. Don't know. Don't see no. I didn't know nothing. I wasn't having any problems. Went and saw. Toby's best friend is an eye doctor there. So I went and saw him. He's like, take these drops 2 weeks, you'll be fine. I take the drops 2 weeks, still the same, maybe even a little bigger. I'm like, so I go back to Georgia. I got a friend that I play a lot of golf with and help with golf. He's cataracts and all the LASIX and all that, big eye doctor. I go see him. He walks in like a minute after walking in and goes, you got to go see somebody else. And I'm like, oh shit. Cause I don't see the thing in my eye.
Yeah.
I don't have any vision problems. I don't know. He goes, you got to go see. There's a lady at Vanderbilt, this neuroocular. I'm like, I don't even know what that is, but okay. So I come up here, see her. She's like, we got to get this out. I'm like, when? She's like, tomorrow. I'm like, wait, what? She's like, yeah, if you'd have waited, because, you know, typical man, you know, how men do. Like it ain't bothering me. Hell, I'm
fine.
I keep going. Rub some
hit
dirt
it with
on
a hammer.
Rub some dirt on it. Get back in there. I mean, so that's the way I was raised. And I was like, but luckily Megan was like, no, we're going to see. And she said, if you'd have waited another couple of weeks, you'd have probably had to do full chemo with some kind of cancer thing. And she said, if you'd have waited a month or two, you might have lost your eye. And I'm like, oh my God, that's crazy. So I get it. Fine. Everything's good. And then I had about, that was 2020. So then February, March 21, I wake up one day and I'm like, my eye won't open all the way. It's like halfway down. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. And immediately I start to panic because I'm going, it's the same eye where I had the cancer thing. Is that is shit? Did it come? Typical, you just start panicking. You don't know.
Yeah.
So I get back to see her immediately. And she goes, it's not that. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Send me to another, and they diagnosed me with an autoimmune disease called myasthenia gravis. I never heard of it before. I know a fair amount about autoimmune diseases. Never heard of it before. Never, you know, all we do is ride around on a bus and watch TV. I've seen every commercial known to man. I know everything that's on TV. Never heard of myasthenia gravis. Never seen no commercial for myasthenia gravis. And the doctor's like, well, yeah, it's pretty rare. But the guy, he told me, he goes, I see it once every 2 years in somebody. And he said, I've seen it 10 times in the last 6 months. And I'm like, huh. He goes, now I'm not going on TV and saying this, but it had to come from the vaccination.
Yeah.
He goes, it just did. He goes, I'm sorry. And there's no cure for this disease, for this one. And it affects the muscles in your throat, your face, and neurologically. So all of a sudden I could see you perfect through either eye, but then I'd look at you together and I'd see three of you melting like a lava lamp. And that is bizarre. Like it was, well, he goes, he's telling me all this, he's like, well, you need tons of rest and no stress. And I'm looking at him like, man, I'm gonna punch you in the face, buddy. Cause I don't have no way to do that. That is not what I do. I meant like, and he's like, oh yeah, also heat really affects it. I'm like, awesome. So that's also what I do a lot during the summer fairs, festivals. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, I had no depth perception. It was dangerous for me to even drive.
You told me that you got depressed.
It sent me into a whirlwind depression. Because what do I like to do? Play golf and shoot shit. And all of a sudden, I can't see.
Yeah.
I have no depth perception. Like, I'd look at you and
you're right eye dominant, aren't you?
Yeah, and I couldn't tell, like, if you were there or you were 100 feet away. Like, it was crazy. And then, you know, and I was so tired. Like, last July, I averaged 17 hours a day sleeping.
Because an autoimmune disease just drains your energy.
Yeah, man, like, I would sleep till 4 o'clock, wake up, take a bite of a sandwich, go back to bed, wake up 30 minutes before the show, play the show, and I'd be in bed before they had trailer loaded. Like, that was all I could do. And so then all of a sudden, I couldn't play golf, you know. 2 days before I got diagnosed, I shot 63. And 2 days later, I can't break 100. You know, I hadn't played for a year.
So how are they treating you?
So I got on a new, the oral drugs they had a couple, and their one side effects is stomach issues. And so when I would take enough of that where I could see really clear, then I became chemo sick. So I'm like, well, that's not really, you know, doing a whole lot of good. And so then I started searching different things, herbal, natural, you know, I'm trying whatever. I found a doctor in Kansas City who was really big with natural supplements and everything and explained a lot of that to me, which was really cool because he's like, listen, doctors don't like these kind of supplements because supplements are made from plants. They can't patent a plant. And so this is bypass. All they're trying to do is in a lab recreate what this plant does so they can market it and sell it. So, but that started helping me a little bit. So then I started getting had some hope because you start losing hope. You're in problem because it got bad. Like I couldn't do anything I wanted to do. I couldn't do what I had been so good at my whole life. And I got on this drug now. It's an infusion drug called Vyvgart. And it has been, you have to do 4 infusions in a row. His concern for giving me that was what we do for a living.
So an infusion, it's like a intravenous, where they just cycle a bag through you.
Yeah, they run. You sit there, and you got to do it. This particular drug, you got to do it 4 weeks in a row. Try to do it at the same time, same day. And I'm like, if I told you right now you had to be somewhere every Tuesday for the next 4 weeks, you'd go, I don't know if I could do that with what we do.
Yeah,
like it's just not that easy. But anyway, I've done my first round of it. I'm feeling a ton better. I'll probably do another round here coming up soon, but for 2 months I've had feel like I've been completely healed almost for 2 months. So they don't know, it's still a little bit of a moving target as to how long it, you know, lasts and how long you got to go in between treatments and everything, but I'm feeling a ton better.
That's good.
A ton better. That's good. My outlook is a ton better. At least I know something that helps me now.
Well, I'm glad to see that you were very depressed the last time.
Yeah, man, I saw it last time. That was 3 months ago at
John's
Daly's
tournament
thing.
Yep.
And I went to play that because That was the first time I'd played. I just did it because John is, you know, he's one of my closest friends. We grew up playing together, and his hit and giggle. So it's like, you know, we were right there in the same groups, like with those guys. But when I got done with that, and even though it's a hit and giggle thing, and I know that, and
but
I know
you
all
still,
that,
but not being when you can't see the ball and you can't strike the ball the way that you know naturally you're capable of
like
doing.
Somebody told me, they're like, well, now you know how you can be like the rest of us. Like, I don't want to be like the rest of you. I don't want to do that. I spent my whole life working really hard to not be like the rest of you. Like, I don't mean that ugly, but like, I told my fiddle player, Justin, who, you know, played Roy Clark for years, I said, well, if you played 3 notes wrong out of every 5 you played on your fiddle, would you be pissed? He's like, very. I was like, exactly. Like, you've worked your whole life to be elite at that. You don't do that. And I'm like, all of a sudden, I can't do anything with this ball that I've had. I've been scratched for 40 years since I was 12 years old. Like, I can't do it. And I went back to the bus after that. I cried like a baby for an hour on the bus because I was just like, I can't keep going like this. It's going to make me go crazy. And luckily, again, Megan, she just fought through it almost for me sometimes when I couldn't fight for myself. She kept encouraging me and kept telling me to, you know, get your ass up and fight, and got some new drugs. Now I'm feeling a whole lot better. I know that I have something that does work. That's a plus. But back to where it came from, like I said, we ride around and watch TV all the time. I've seen every daggum commercial. I could do most of them for you in a one-man act. Never seen nothing about myasthenia gravis. I've seen 3 different drugs with myasthenia gravis commercials on TV. Now I'm like, never seen it in my whole life.
Just all of a sudden.
So all of a sudden now, and it's all this particular, it's like, y'all knew this did something like this. Y'all knew this.
Or they didn't and they didn't care.
I would think, that's what I'm saying. I think it's, well, either way it sucks. But I'm not sure what it is, but you don't all of a sudden have these drugs out of nowhere.
Well, and
it's a little bit like the vaccination. I ain't no smart dude. I'm a redneck boy from Georgia, just like you, old country boy from Arkansas. But I know good and hell well you don't make drugs that work, that you tell me are guaranteed safe, and you've made it in 6-8 months.
And
I'm telling you it don't work that way.
And you're not going to make me believe that all these teenagers and people in their early 20s that are elite athletes are dropping like flies, dying from cardio diseases and strokes and all. You're just not going to make me believe it's not related.
Officer, I became friends with the chief medical officer of one of the top 3 biggest insurance companies in the world, and he said, they're not reporting. He said, can't believe the deaths from 18 to 45 that we're paying out on. It's up like 50%, like astronomical, that are perfectly healthy, have nothing. I mean, like, there's no explanation for this.
Oh, there is.
There is an explanation for it. It just ain't the one that they want to hear. I mean, you think LeBron James' kid's got something wrong with it? You don't think he's got the best doctor, the best physical fitness?
Amen.
You got something else in you that's not normal.
Yeah.
I mean, and my dad, here's my dad, 80. My dad at 80, my dad before pandemic was at the country club at 5 a.m. every morning working out at 82 years old, like a freaking Terminator. Like, he's never weighed more than a day he did to graduate from high school. COVID, things shut down. Obviously, I had been on the road for a while, and on the West Coast, so I'm like, I can't go home and see my parents for a minute. I got to make sure, because my mom's about to be 80. My dad's coming up. It's like, I can't go home and compromise that, because nobody knew. We're all scared to death. But I went home about 4 months after that. And this man that, like, he never got COVID, but it scared the life out of him. Scared the life out of him. Because all he did, now he quit moving. And all he did was sit there and watch TV. And I went back home 4 months later. And my dad, who could honestly walk circles around me at that time, couldn't hardly get out of that chair. And it's, oh man,
it's awful.
It breaks my heart. It was gone. Just, I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
And literally never played golf again. It's awful.
I talked to Joe Diffie on Sunday. We had been I'd been out with Justin Moore.
Yeah, you
and the first the, we had finished up in Denver, Kansas. We played Indianapolis, Denver, Kansas City, and I was Justin and I were talking. We'd sit down. It's like, okay, I'd ordered a bunch of hand sanitizer, wipes, all that stuff. We were talking about restructuring our meet and greets, backing off of all that because everybody was saying this fish can get bad. So we came off the road. I got back home, and I mean Tuesday that week. It was done.
Right.
Everything was shut down. I think that following Sunday, I talked to Joe every couple of weeks. Man, me and him were tight. We talked all the time. So I talked to Joe. He'd been down in Florida at Lori Morgan's house.
Yeah.
And doing whatever. And he said, man, I just don't feel good. I'm having shortness of breath and everything. So when he got back to town on Monday, his wife made him go take a test.
Yeah.
Everything had to be sent off. So Wednesday, the test came back, and they said, yes, you've got it. Came in. So she drove him to the medical center. They didn't even let her out of the car.
Right.
Got him out. Made him fill out the paperwork, took him in the hospital, put him in a medically induced coma, and he died that Sunday.
Yeah.
She never saw him alive
again. I saw him a few weeks before that, too. And it's like, and God, what a, just this prince of a guy. And
oh, loved him dearly, man.
One of the best country singers has ever stood in front of a microphone.
Without a doubt. And just to know how quick, and I think he didn't have to die. We just didn't understand it.
Well, nobody knew
what
to do.
But you don't put a guy his size on a ventilator and throw him on his back for a week and expect him to, because he died of a heart attack. That's right. What killed him.
Yeah, I meant like.
But it's, I mean, you look back over all that. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that happened in a short period of time that I don't think they should have ever shut our country down for one. I mean, you don't do that. You isolate isolate everybody.
Oh, you did. I meant that was.
You created so much mental illness. You
created so much more stuff besides that.
Yeah.
I meant like the mental health side of things. The stuff that people are already terrified to talk about. But no way that was good for youngins and kids. And
no.
I meant like.
And we're more fortunate than a lot. I mean, being in Tennessee, I mean, things were fairly normal here. By July, we were back, the gyms were open. We were back to able to go doing things, not so much downtown Nashville, but in the next county out where we live, things were fairly normal.
Right.
Restaurants were half capacity, but we were able to go buy groceries, and we're contained out here. I mean, we had compound Olympics. We had all the families down here. Yeah, we'd go out and play games and all this stuff. I mean, we just adapted. We did whatever we had to do. But I had friends in New York, man. People in the play world, man, they couldn't even go out. Parents couldn't go out together with their kids to take them outside.
That was awful. And it was just amazing to me that it's all of a sudden like you can still go buy weed and you can still buy liquor, but you can't go to church. I mean, like there's a lot more evil stuff going on than people might want to care to. You know, and I'm not a huge conspiracy theorist. I mean, I'm kind of a live and let live, and as long as you ain't hurting nobody. But
we took the kids to see Sound of Freedom the other night, and I'm telling you what, it moved me. I don't know if
my mom, I hadn't got to see it yet, and my mama's been on me. She's like, you've got to go see this movie. I just came off 3 weeks off the road, but in hell, we leave again. We'll play here Thursday, but we leave again. It's like. I just hadn't got to go see it, but my mom said it was pretty powerful.
It was really powerful, and I don't understand why everybody got all up in arms over it, because I didn't really see anything that I mean, that's just if people doing that and you got a problem with
everything. They don't like the color of this chair now. I mean, it's like I ain't never done a thing to nobody because of the color of their skin. That's never been a thing to me. Like, I just don't even understand it.
You know, I was born in 68, and I started kindergarten, I think, in 74, 75, something like that. The town that I grew up in, my kindergarten class was the first totally integrated kindergarten class in that school. They had integrated high school.
Right.
So I went from kindergarten through 12th grade with all the same kids. I knew everybody. I mean, I had birthday parties. I mean, they were all my friends. We played.
Right. We played ball together.
We'd get in a fight on the playground. Next day, we're fine. You go get back suit up and go on.
Yeah.
And so I never understood any of it. None of it ever made sense
to me. It was always the same for me because, I mean, I'm a year behind you. I'm at 69, and same for me. Like, I didn't. These guys I grew up playing sports with, played ball.
We suited up. We got whipped at the same time.
I wrote a song. I wrote a song called "Pick Your Own Switch," which is
I've done that.
The era
it better
that
be a good
we
one.
Grew up in. Yeah, my mama still try to make me do that. But she, like, we grew up in that era. Like, I meant like you. I could get a whipping at any house on my street.
Oh, Daddy told the school when if he gets in trouble at school, you whip him and then call me and I'm gonna whip him when he gets home.
Like I told me, I was like, it was a possible 3 ass whipping day for me.
Oh yeah,
because Miss Judy's gonna whip my ass. I'm going. She sent me home knowing that she's calling my mama, telling her now my mama's embarrassed. So as soon as I walk in, she's whipping my ass. Then I possibly have a third if she decides to tell Dad.
Oh yeah,
when he gets home. So it's like, these kids today, you even look at them wrong, and you can't do that. I'm like, man, I got knocked out where I was at.
It was a different day, I've told my wife this. She laughs all the time. When we would get fireworks, my aunt was a smoker. I'm 5 years old, and I didn't get those little long ones. I got a cigarette to light firecrackers with, so I'm puffing on a cigarette at 5 or 6 years old, lighting firecrackers.
Just to keep it lit.
That's all. Yeah, yeah, but I'm just saying, that's just the way it was.
You know how many times we...
This was the seatbelt.
Yeah, exactly. Not necessarily this far apart, shooting bottle rockets at each other. And like the crazy stuff we did.
All of it.
I don't know. It's just a different time now.
And I miss a lot of it. I mean, kids need to fall down. They need to learn what it feels like to get hurt at a young age.
Get a trophy. I everybody don't get a trophy. I'm like, that's not, you're doing your kid a disservice.
It's not right. Because there's something that comes from losing. It should instill a desire in you to want to try harder and to practice harder and excel. And if you never get pushed to that level, you know, you're never going to be able to achieve any kind of greatness in your life.
My dad would say there's more than one L in losing. There's one for learning. You lose, you learn something. What do you do to make mistakes? You get better at it. Like, I don't understand some of it.
I don't either, but
it's sad and it's scary and... You know, my son's getting ready to get married, and I'm thinking about him, like, having a kid. I'm like, do you want to? I don't know. Like, it scares me to death. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Different time.
Well, I don't want to stay down this rabbit hole, but I do want to ask you, what new stuff you got coming out? What's on the horizon? And let's get all your socials and stuff out there for everybody.
Man, I got, this record, I got so much music I recorded. I was bored. And I just writing all over the board. So me and the kid, Brian Martin, I was telling you about, have an EP coming out near the end of the year.
Good.
This album just came out with 24 songs on it. And there's an artist named Tech N9ne from Missouri he's a huge independent rapper, been one of the biggest the last 20 years. He had a partner, there's partners with him one of the best songwriters, wrote a lot of stuff. There's a kid named Chris Calico from Kansas City. Him and I just put a new EP together called Hoodbillies. And we're calling it smile music. Like, it is just, it's just fun. So, I mean, it's just two guys that have had very good careers doing what we did on our own, kind of just making some good, fun music that anybody, a little kid can listen to, you can listen to. So we got that going. So there's a ton of music coming. And, you know, all the Instagram, TikTok, and I'm trying to figure out that TikTok thing. I don't know that that's made for you and I. I'll be honest with you. Well, other than cat videos.
Work on your butt a little bit. Yeah, I mean, them glutes.
Yeah, it's more than a little bit. I'm going to have to go see them Kardashian doctors, I think.
Instead of trying to take it down, just pump it up a little bit.
Nicki Minaj booties. I don't know. I'm just excited to be able to still be playing music and still be making music, and people still come to see and sing along, and you know, you're still out there doing the same thing. It's a blessing, and it's lucky. We're so lucky to be able to do that, to play music for a living. I meant, and to get out there and know that something, my dad would always go, something you do today might make a difference in somebody's life.
Yeah.
And when you're young, you're going, yeah, whatever, Dad. But he's right. Yeah. Like that's, yeah. Remember that. Maybe you don't know what this person's going through, so I don't ever mind taking pictures or whatever, because it's like, if it wasn't for them folks, them fans, you know, wouldn't be here.
That's it, brother.
And I just love seeing them still out there singing along, and no matter what's going on with me, when I'm playing live, like, I can play with kidney stones, I've played with the flu, I've played throwing up in between songs, my crew guy's going trash can in between songs, I'm puking right back out, start another one, like, nothing takes the place of that playing live for me. I love it so much.
Even on the worst day, brother.
On the worst day, when I feel like I've been ate by a coyote and shit over a cliff, I mean, I can still get up when the music starts.
That switch comes on.
90 man. Minutes or so, I can make it go away. I don't know how, but I do.
I agree.
And I meant, so I'm just glad to still be doing it. Glad you're still doing it. Glad to be your friend and be a part of what you got going here. I appreciate you.
Well, I'm proud of you, proud for you, proud to call you my friend, brother.
Same here, my bud.
Thank you for being here, man.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Mr. Colt Ford.